How Long Gone is here. Jason is home in Glendale. All is well. Cutter Chris is hanging out in Dubai.
I'm looking out, Jason, right now from the 35th floor of the Ciro Hotel. And of course, with just my luck, I did arrive on a day in Dubai where they received the most rain in 23 years that they've ever had. So the streets are literally flooding. Getting here, from the airport this morning, I saw cars submerged in water. No joke. And what I learned, and which I didn't know, and maybe I'm stupid, but
no.
Because there's so little rain here, they actually induce rain by sending planes up when they know there's going to be clouds and letting out a chemical that forces the rain to happen, which is really blew my mind.
Yeah, you know who else does that?
Here we go.
Joe Biden's regime.
That's
Joe
right.
Joe Biden's regime does that.
That's absolutely right. So it was a pretty...
No, I mean, obviously, our weather's been controlled for years, but I did know... You're not stupid for not knowing that, but I did know that Dubai does that. Only because I've seen, a Twitter video about it, not because I've, studied any of this stuff.
Okay,
because
I was gonna ask, how did you know that? But I guess we pick stuff up along the way. You know, that's the beauty of...
Well, I'm famously more of a weather guy than you are. It piques my interest and it's in my algo. But okay, so Karan Chris has touched down on a wet little it's Tuesday here in America. I'm assuming it's February there. How does it work?
Yeah, it's Tuesday. No, it's Tuesday, but it's 8 p.m. instead of 9 a.m. where you are. So we're fully
okay.
We're different ends of the pendulum.
The yin has been yanged.
The yin has been yanged, but it's starting to make me wonder, because you know when I went to Korea, it snowed and the weather was awful, and now I'm starting to worry that any flight over 12 hours doesn't bode well for me, and I want to break the curse.
Well,
you know, so the sun better come out tomorrow.
I think the what would prove that to be incorrect is our trip to Australia.
That's true. That's a good point. But Australia is also
long ass flight. We arrived. It was fucking paradise.
Fucking paradise.
They don't have to induce rain.
We don't induce.
It's just wet.
They only induce labor.
We don't induce
on
rain,
those.
And the rain that they do have is just a little bit better. Okay, so how? Walk me through the flight. I want to know what the cabin vibe was like. I want to know if you had a cool seat. I want to know about the food, the wine.
I mean,
list,
I didn't
in-flight entertainment.
It was 12 and a half hours, and then we had to circle for 45 minutes because of the weather. So we're touching 13 and a half hours.
So it's quick from New York. That's cool.
Quick. I didn't consume a single piece of food that the airlines offered, so much so that the multiple stewardesses came up to me and demanded I eat yogurt. And I was like, nope, I'm good. I had my Go Macro, and I'm going to thug it out with some Perrier on ice. They did keep the Perrier on ice flowing, but much like Europe, they don't understand ice. They don't scoop it. They take it with tongs.
Mm.
So they put three little cubes, and I'm like, fill this thing up. And the guy looked at me like I was a dickhead, you know. But so you would like this. The plane, the Dubai, or excuse me, the Emirates first class has...
You're not a dickhead. Sorry.
Has a lounge. Like a full bar that you can stand at and order your scotch, and then it's got like banquette seating.
James Bond style.
Yeah.
I'm with it.
Banquette seating.
Grab and go snacks. I've been on planes that have that before. I had to sort of look at it from afar, but I didn't feel as if I was deputized to saddle up and order myself three fingers of Dewars.
I do think I was on the plane with a points guy style influencer. He was sitting in the first class cabin, which is not... I was in business. He was in first. And he was dressed a little... He didn't look rich. You know what I mean? But he was recording everything on his phone, and walking up and down the aisles and whispering to himself.
Okay.
And I'm like, this guy... I'm gonna be on this guy's YouTube video.
This motherfucker, his email address is @businessinsider.
Yeah, it was so funny.
I'm actually covering this. I'm covering the business class flight section for Forbes.com.
Yeah, that's exactly what it felt like. But he, I don't know. I couldn't get a read on him. But no, the crowd.
But he did have first class, and you didn't, though.
Yeah, of course. But that's what I'm saying. I think it's
game recognized game.
It was free. I guess mine was free too, but that's a different issue.
Sure.
But the I think people are just coming here now, like to hang. Like there were like old couples next to me on the plane that felt like they were from Missouri. That are just like coming to Dubai to kick it, check out the Nobu, the mall. I don't know why you would come here unless you were on a fitness holiday.
We're from Michigan. We just wanted to come check it out.
Yeah,
as if they're going to the Grove or something.
Yeah, no, honestly, I'm just like I could not figure it out. I could not figure it out. But the flight was long and brutal. The Wi-Fi did work, so I was able to communicate with my friends and colleagues as well as send and respond to several emails.
Just imagine those Emirates emails flying
zoom. But then so I got here and I immediately felt like shit. I didn't sleep at all. I felt awful. I took a little nap, had a coffee, and then went for a little cryo, my inaugural voyage. And I gotta say, Jason, I know we've been leaning hot. I think cold might be better.
Okay, the
unfortunate part is I had to put on men's disposable briefs to do it in, but otherwise it was a great experience. So you put on the briefs.
Men's disposable briefs?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the booties you wear when you go into an open house, but for
the hog. Exactly.
Pee pee poo poo.
Exactly. Exactly. So I get the
okay. What is it made out of?
I don't know, similar material. So it's.
I thought you worked in fashion. What I need textiles, bitch.
I don't understand synthetics, sweetheart.
Okay.
I change in the locker room.
It's not ostrich, I'll tell you that.
And then I get assigned to like this little Filipino dude, and he's like, "Have you ever done this before?" And I'm like, "No, it's my first time." So I proceed to have to strip down to my men's disposable briefs with gloves on, an ear warmer, and North Face slide, like insulated shoes. And
okay.
I step into the chamber for my 5-minute session. That's all it takes. And
it's an eternity.
He starts, it's like a shower stall. It's a big one. So he's facing me. I can see him, and he's leading me in a series of stretches. and it's just so cold that you're just going with it. It's like, yeah, fuck
it. To be clear, he wasn't stretching your penis until happens.
No. He was literally like guiding me. I was basically bussing it all the way down for this Filipino man in the cryo chamber with these briefs. It was a wild experience.
Okay. So,
but
I've seen people do cryo before, and you put on the little mittens and the little thingy so you don't get frostbite and your extremities stay intact.
Yeah.
And they don't have to cut it off with a saw. But I think usually people just kind of sit there and chatter their teeth for 90 seconds and then they run away. You were in there doing burpees?
He said to me, he's like, well, I think most cryo chambers feel more like a chamber, like it's like tight. And this one was big enough where you can move around. So I think it's encouraged.
Little square footage.
Yeah, exactly. The square footage is nice on this one. So I guess they wanted me to move around. So I moved around. And I got to say, I felt fucking amazing when I got out of there. I felt completely reinvigorated.
Really?
Completely reinvigorated. Like amazing. Skin glowing. I felt so good. It absolutely worked.
Do you know what the temp was?
-80.
It's
cold, but it was I highly recommend it.
So it was like almost like Montreal level in there.
Yeah,
crazy,
it's,
man.
It's Montreal it's Montreal in February. But yeah, it was something.
That's
else,
great. I'm glad. So are you addicted? Or have you been craving the cryo chamber? Do you have cryo Stockholm syndrome? I want to be stung again by the sweet freeze.
I'll be stung again before I leave, for sure. I've no question. And then I mean obviously it's easy to continue in LA. I'm sure there's several places that offer this in New York City as well, but I would say I'm a changed man. And then I met a new friend in the recovery lounge, a cool British dude, and I'm like, do you live here? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, you just moved here? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, for what? He's like, ah, my girlfriend and I just wanted to change. And I'm in, you know, the tech world and she's an analyst. So like we can work from wherever. And I'm just like, damn, this guy is sitting here in this massage chair next to me at 3:30 in the afternoon in Dubai. He might have it figured out, you know?
Right.
He suggested a hip hop beach party for me to go to if I really wanted to check out the nightlife scene, which I did say I would love to hear rap music out in public because now all I hear is, you know, electro or Madonna. So it would be nice, but I don't know if I'm going to have time to make it over there.
Okay. So what are the rules over there, like the social rules, like with drinking and partying and walking and smoking and things like that? Like what can and can't
I don't
you do
know,
over
I don't,
there?
You
haven't left the hotel.
Well, I haven't been outside yet. So yeah, no, I'm not going to leave the hotel. No, I haven't left the hotel. I mean, there's a bar at the hotel, like a full big bar. So I assume you can drink here.
Unless you're a woman.
Well, yeah, of course. If you're a woman, you can't go out. Everybody's gay here, so it's fine. It's not really a big
deal. Is public displays of homosexuality is that permitted or is that frowned upon?
Oh, I don't think you do that here. That's my guess. I don't know. I mean, okay. I can try if you want me to, but I don't know.
No, I don't. I'm not Chris. Chris, don't risk it.
Don't you 50. Can, don't 56.
They have saunas
nights,
back in America. Just don't. Yeah.
I 56 nights myself in the sauna.
Being on the DL is punishable by death. Like he was stoned in the town square for being quote unquote low with it.
We've convicted him for being low with it. All right, we have a guest today. Ethan James Green is a photographer that lives in New York City. You probably know his work from Vogue, Wall Street Journal Magazine, Love, ID, etc. He's got a gallery called New York Life. And Ethan was a model, and then he assisted a legend, David Armstrong, before he became a photographer. So a lot to discuss.
Yeah, just one of those guys who's like, yeah, I'm a model, I'm a painter, I'm a photographer, I excel at all of those, and I'm also hot.
Exactly.
Let's give him a jingle. Korea World is a new cookbook written by Dookie Hong and friend of the show, Matt Rodbard. The New York Times best-selling authors of the book Koreatown.
Korea World is a vibrant exploration of the evolution of Korean cuisine, both in Korea and in Koreatowns across the United States, with more than 75 bold, flavor-packed recipes and stunning photography.
The authors take an inside look at the exciting evolution of Korean food through stories of chefs, home cooks, as well as recipes that are shaping modern Korean cuisine.
The book begins in Seoul, where the barbecue scene is pushing into new territory and where the city's third wave coffee culture is exploding.
The tour continues with late night food adventures in Los Angeles, my hometown, and stops into the kitchens of innovative chefs from New York City to Portland, who are putting modern spins on Korean classics.
Recipes include giant short ribs, whole fried smash rockfish, and pineapple kimchi fried rice.
I'm sad I didn't get to name the foods and you did. Korea World is essential reading for anyone curious about the future of food.
Available wherever books are sold.
This episode of How Long Gone is brought to you by Babbel. I fancy myself a trilinguist myself, but it usually only applies when I'm ordering food in restaurants. Mm. So, you know, I'm picking up Babbel so I can have some more conversational Spanish, Vietnamese, and other languages. I feel like everyone knows the food stuff, but, you know, taking an extra step in case you're in a situation when you're traveling, you're in the hills of Oaxaca. You don't have service for your little Google Translate shit. Learn it the old-fashioned way with Babbel.
Do the work. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations. Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/howlong. Get 55% off, that's more than half, at babbel.com/howlong, spelled BABBEL.com/howlong. Rules and restrictions may apply.
That 50% off discount is great, as I am unfortunately fluent in broken knees.
Sorry, Ethan, I'm in Dubai right now. At a fitness and recovery hotel, and my room has a treadmill a elliptical machine and a full set of free weights.
And you've been using that, all of it?
Are you serious?
Yeah, it has. I haven't used any of it yet because there's also an insane gym like in the building. But just in case I need like an early morning pump, I can just walk on over and kind of...
Dude, that's so sick.
It's really funny. It's really funny. It's got a little bench and everything.
10 minutes before bed on the treadmill?
Exactly. Yeah, 10 minutes before bed.
Ethan, are you in a gallery right now? Is this your home, a hotel in Paris? Where are you?
No, this is my apartment in Brooklyn.
Okay. This is why people move to Brooklyn, because it looks...
Bro, your crown molding has crown molding. What the fuck?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, no.
My building's really amazing. I'm in Brooklyn Heights, and apparently my building, before it was split up in apartments, originally was the mansion for someone who was in the family of one of the mob leaders from Gangs of New York. Do you know that movie?
Okay. So it's got some history.
Well, some history.
If those walls could talk, even before you moved in.
Yeah, I think there's like ghosts. People always talk about ghosts in the building.
Like the ghost of Daniel Day-Lewis's makeup artist? Like, what are we talking about?
I mean, I've seen some like moving shapes and things, but people in the hallways will talk about it. Or
like a Madonna video?
Yeah.
Are you in a group chat with your neighbors to kind of... just to keep track on the visitors?
The raccoon is back.
No, when I moved into the building, I think just because it was part of the like Brooklyn Heights kind of like millennial arrival that happened right after COVID, and the older people in the building were trying to like maybe scare me away or something, because right when I came in, they're like, oh, by the way, there's ghosts. Like,
just so you know, if you haven't signed your lease yet, there are ghosts, just so you know. Just so you know.
You're like, the HOA fees scared me plenty, don't worry.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, you do have a beautiful and elegant apartment. I am quite impressed. You should be proud of yourself. Is there anything that you don't do? You know what I mean? Was this designed interiorly by yourself, or did you outsource, like Grimes's DJ said, did you outsource any of this furniture and interior design?
No, I did it with a friend, my friend Dylan Bailey. I had like all the paintings and the furniture, but he helped me kind of pick the color, and then I had everything like sitting on the floor for a year and a half, so he helped me hang everything.
sure.
And he just has like the ultimate taste, so he kind of guided me through or just enhanced what I was given.
Mm-hmm. We all need a friend that enhances. That's why I try to hang out with people that are not as good looking as I am, just so they kind of make me look a little better, you know? Similar vibe.
I'm the enhancer. Are you one of those people where the placement of things in your home and the feng shui is like extremely important to you on like an emotional level, or are you able to just be kind of willy-nilly with it? Loosey goosey.
I mean, I'm not like feng shui, but because I feel like I have a lot of mirrors pointing in wrong directions that would go against that, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there's some symmetry going on, and it's more like the paintings kind of like, I feel like they talk with each other, but
it's not just it's not the ghosts talking, it's the paintings talking to each other.
But the paintings maybe bring the ghosts too, you know.
Ooh, so you're part of the problem. You're part of the problem. I got it.
Yeah.
Okay, so the ghosts are nude is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Did you move to Brooklyn Heights from Manhattan because you were ready to slow down, or did you just love the space?
Well, I was in Chinatown for 10 years, and then I, like a week before COVID lockdown happened, I moved to Williamsburg, which I lived back in 2009, but I did a return to Williamsburg for, I don't know why. I think it was because I was leaving.
Not the return.
No, it was crazy.
Not the return to Williamsburg.
Yeah, it was like running towards a tidal wave or something instead of like running away. But I like moved there a week before lockdown. I decided to start fresh. Then I left all of my furniture in my Chinatown apartment. And I did like 2 months with no furniture, because I couldn't get any furniture. I had like a bed and a metal folding chair.
Chic.
And then
jail style.
Yeah, no, it, there was beautiful light. That was about it.
Look, I'm a photographer. This is the things that I prioritize. What can I say?
I had no pesky furniture getting in the way of my dappled lighting.
Yeah.
It's just a raw space.
Yeah. But so that never, like, that apartment never really happened. And then a year after, that building was being sold. And I had a few friends move to Brooklyn Heights. And then one of them had just signed her lease and she was still looking at apartments, and she found this one and she's like, you need to come, you need to move here. So my friend Julia,
you're telling me you have a friend like Jason and I's wives who looks at Zillow no matter what, no matter how many houses you buy, they just keep looking at Zillow and they send you links and you don't ask for them. Is that what you're talking about?
Get it out, brother Chris. Get it out.
No, this was very helpful.
That's great. That's a good New York story, though. I think it is. I think it's always kind of by happenstance that you find a great apartment. It's never through like the proper channels.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and I like walked in and before I saw the whole thing, I was already asking.
Mm-hmm.
To do it.
You're signing there like, there's no bathroom, and you're like, I don't care.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
Okay, are you the type of Brooklyn resident who, when you go out of town for 3 days for a shoot in Paris, you sublet it on your close friend's Instagram story, or maybe not so much?
No. No, I'm so bad because I get this from my dad where, like, I don't think I would let people drink red wine in my house. Oh. You know, I still haven't had a housewarming or anything. I've been here 3 years. I'll have a couple friends over, but I'm so scared because, like, if the couches get stained or anything, it's game over.
Okay.
Because everything's antique.
Well, luckily your couch is looking Merlot-ish, though. I think red wine might be safe, but
yeah, that's a Gamay Velveteen, I'm pretty sure. So you get this from your daddy, is what you're saying. He instilled, what would you call this? It's not OCD. It's just like your sacred space. I feel like a lot of people got that way after COVID when they like nested in their home and then they're like, nobody can come in here. This is my zone, you know?
I mean, I feel like it's a lot of OCD.
You're like, no, it's just straight OCD.
OCD.
My dad was just very like, and now as a grandpa, he's so much more chill about it all. Mm-hmm. But in the house I grew up in, we lived with like wood surrounding our house. My parents had white carpet, white walls, three boys.
Hell no.
And we'd play outside all day, every day, and then come in and they would carry us one by one to the basement where all of our bedrooms were. And we'd like have to like fully shower. My dad would like hose us down outside.
That's cool.
But we weren't allowed to touch the walls. And if we had friends over, the friends would get in trouble if they touched the walls.
Okay.
You know, I thought my mom was a freak for like, my mom would vacuum the carpet every day. So it was like a baseball outfield. Like there were lines in the carpet.
The lines.
But she wasn't lifting me up and taking me to the basement after I played with my friends. That's a different level.
Yeah, it sounds pretty dark. It sounds pretty dark, but it was very loving.
I'm sure your therapists have heard about this a little bit.
Yeah.
Did you guys have an epic mud room at this Michigander homestead?
I mean, our basement just like never was finished. Like our bedrooms were, but then all of our bedrooms kind of met. There was like a big kind of like cement area that we could just kind of like take over as kids. And then like once we all left the house, my parents finished the basement.
God damn it. God damn it.
That's growing up, everyone should have a communal cement area. I firmly agree. <Yeah. remember that. laughs> Zone of interest style.
Yeah.
We had our basement was half finished too. And there was the concrete. There was the other concrete side that had like a lawnmower in it.
These Nepo babies I'm talking to. We have a basement. We have a basement. Wow, fuck. Jesus.
I know.
And you had a dad. Wow, cool.
A basement is something that your parents either spend $50,000 on to finish to get rid of you as a child, or they leave it completely raw so it floods every 10 years and it costs, you know, more money to fix. There's no upside to it, really.
Okay, so your OCD does not extend into like jiggling doorknobs 16 times counterclockwise, that level of it. It's more of just Swiffering every hour on the hour.
No, it's more like if there's things on the table, they need to be straight, you know, nothing can hang over the edge, you know.
Okay. And does that extend into your cropping work and your other artistic disciplines?
I would say yes.
She's a cropper.
A cropper, yeah. I'm very particular. The details really matter.
Yeah.
But I'm starting to let go. I'm learning.
Growth.
Do you have somebody in your life who's like, not everything needs to be perfectly 90 degrees, you know, like tilted a little bit, and you're like, ugh. But it's better. I mean, I'm kind of the same way as you. Like, I like everything to be perfectly aligned in my own little brain. And my wife, who's a wardrobe stylist, will be like, just move that. Just like little, you know, change it just a little bit so it doesn't look like you have a stick up your ass kind of thing.
I mean, if something's on the wall, it needs to be straight. You know,
yeah, that's reasonable. Like, you start sweating. You're like, if it's on the wall, it's got to be straight. It's got to be straight.
Yeah.
But what about a book on a table? What about a book on a table? We tilting?
I think I'll like fix it, but I'm not like crazy with it. Like right now, my coffee table, it's like not. It looks pretty normal.
It's a B plus.
It looks pretty normal. Yeah.
What is your book collection like? Does it overtake your life, or are you pretty reasonable with it?
I need to get a bookshelf. I have a lot of books on the floor, but it's like a lot of art books. So they're all like really heavy.
Yeah, it's the worst. I've spent my life collecting shit that I sit in shelves, and it's very heavy, and moving it once makes you want to get rid of all of it. But I've worked so hard, and it starts to, it's like, I know so many guys who've sold all their records because they move them one too many times, and they're like, fuck it, I'm getting rid of all of these, and I hope I don't hit that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad too, because it gets to a point that it's like, it becomes just like decoration.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. exactly, that's what you want to avoid, I know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a big, I'm a magazine keeper, which is really a problem. Mm. And I'm learning to let go on that as well.
I want you to have a magazine library in your home, just specifically for mags. Wouldn't that be so fun?
Yeah.
A couple beanbag chairs.
Yeah, all my friends that come over that really want to look at that issue of Days with Richard Ashcroft on the cover, but they can't seem to get it. Mm-hmm. It's a real limited pool, but I could get there one day. Beanbags would be a nice touch.
Mm. I agree. I wanted to talk to you about being an artist, photographer on social media. How much, or I guess, how do you kind of balance how much your personal life and photos of yourself are included with your work? Because I get a lot of followers who are like photographers or artists, and you go to their page and it's just magazine covers and photos of other people, and I'm like, what does this bitch look like? It's very hard, so you have to add a little bit in there. So I want to know if you have a strategy. Bitch could be male or female or non-binary, of course.
So, I don't know. I really, like, I fought against it for a while, and I was very, like, you know, I want to be booked based off of my pictures. And
right. Like, not wanting to show yourself.
Yeah, no, I wasn't given much. And then the past like year, because I opened a gallery out of my mm-hmm. photo studio, I had to become a bit more front facing. And it's funny, once you start doing that, like, more people interact with you, you book more gigs. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like,
yeah. Well, I'm sure your DMs are lit up. I'm sure your DMs are lit.
Well, also you are a literal model, so displaying photos of yourself is a little bit more comfortable for you than other people. But I think that, you know, it used to be the sort of one for you, one for them for commercial versus editorial work, and now it's like one for you, one for them, and one of me on the feed.
Yeah.
Because people are like, oh. Because we can now look at a photo of somebody and be like, I don't want to hire this motherfucker. I don't like their shoes or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. Or like, mm-hmm. I love the way this girl's dressed. She has a cute dog and her friends look nice. I'm booking her. It's like that, you know?
Yeah.
Luckily, you're hot.
Well, thank you.
A gift and a curse. No, I mean, I after having, but you've had your picture taken so much. I feel like that just really, it takes the, I don't know. It's just, it doesn't mean as much. It's just like, yeah, I've got a million pictures of myself. I can share them when I need to, but you needed a reason.
Like magazines for you, Chris.
The gallery was the reason, though, is what you're saying.
Yeah. No, the gallery made it where I had to like talk. I couldn't just give like credits to a picture. which like I really
you had to write captions.
You had to sell it.
I love just giving those credits.
Look, Ethan, I want to talk to you about credits for a second because it's getting a little out of control. This is something we talk about on the podcast a lot. We don't need to be thanking the Uber driver and the caterer. Like, where do you stop?
I stop at like, you know, it's like the call sheet.
Oh, it's
everyone who's working on the picture.
On the actual picture. Okay. Hair, makeup, yeah. Stylist, hair, makeup, stylist, art director, photographer. That sounds reasonable to me.
Yeah.
That sounds reasonable.
You know, classic list.
Yeah, classic, you know. Classic.
But I picked up coffees. Add me to it.
I literally see things. I see things every day where I'm like, this is insane that we've gotten to this point. It's a fucking encyclopedia of handles.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
No. I think too, like once you start going that far, there's no way you won't forget someone and then you're in trouble.
That's true. Yeah, that's 100%
true.
Yeah. You just like, it's that's too true. Many to name. Thank you to my team. I love you guys. Just keep it short like that. Instead of like the tailor's assistant.
Yeah.
I also want to talk about with the best team, because that is something.
Team, that is you so liberally. Because the people who say it, they say it on every shoot. But I mean,
because that's what I mean. Is every team can't be the best? That's just the nature of the phrase.
I think it's been reduced to whatever team pays me is the best team. That's how tough it is out here.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever team pays. No, I just think all that stuff is quite funny because I do know that for better or worse, for most photographers, Instagram is the way you get booked.
Yeah,
you know, it's like really, it really is that important. And it's that way for several industries now, but I just think that it's like at a certain point we got to just put the pictures up, and it's like, bro, it's the cover of Vogue. What do you want?
Yeah.
Like that. Like what more do you need me to do? Do you need me to list the caterer? I don't know if it's the best team. It's the cover of Vogue. Leave me alone.
I was just gonna say as summertime is approaching, you're a person who probably travels for work a lot. How often are you taking the time to book a flight yourself? That does not involve work at all, where you have to fly somewhere out of your pocket instead of getting paid.
So far, really, it's just like when I go home to Michigan, and I'll try to do that. Like I'll go in the summer every August, but I'm an uncle of three, a gunkle of three. So I'm trying to like be home more because you really just like time.
I'm in a nephew thruple as a gunkle.
A nephew thruple is the okay, so
gunkle thruple.
So is your brother, you have
two brothers.
They both have kids or just one has three?
My younger brother has two and then my older brother has one.
Okay, and what do these guys do for a live? I just want to see how far you strayed from the family. So what do these guys do for a living? This episode of How Long Gone is brought to you by booking.com. Booking.yeah, from cozy bed and breakfast to trendy boutique hotels, with so many choices across the beautiful United States of America, you can book whoever you want to be. That can look like booking a 5-star hotel to indulge your luxury side, that's me, or booking a remote cabin in the woods to explore your adventurous side.
So spring has sprung, the sun is out, the sun is shining, I can't wait to get to New York. Check out booking.com for your ideal hotel or vacation home, no matter where you go in the U.S.
Booking.yeah.
Book whoever you want to be on booking.com. Booking.yeah.
How Long Gone is brought to you by Nutrafol. As you know, hair thinning is quite complicated. Like your skin, hair is a reflection of your health. And internal factors can impact the way your hair looks, feels, and most importantly, grows. Nutrafol's whole body approach multi-targets underlying root causes like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrient gaps for visibly thicker, stronger hair.
Go ahead, give it a tug. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth suppy, with over 1 million people seeking thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with considerably less shedding. Thank God. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair for a limited time. Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code HOWLONG, all one word. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and stylists and professional stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol. I got Raf on the nut.com promo code HOWLONG. That's Nutrafol.com. Promo code, how long?
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on. I compromise every day, Jason, as you know, because that's kind of part of being a good friend and partner.
Oh, wow.
I am forced to keep food in my refrigerator against my will because my wife demands it. But when it comes to your health, Jason, there's absolutely no compromise. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines, their family group chat, or their crossword puzzles just because they're available right now or because they take your slightly sketchy insurance. I know you have sketchy insurance, Jason. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and most importantly, prioritize your health. And you can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know.
ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. All these doctors are real, with verified reviews from actual patients. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists near you, or if you want to book one far away from you, that's your decision. Go to ZocDoc.com/howlong and download ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That is ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/howlong. ZocDoc.com/howlong.
So my older brother works for Hoka.
Oh, okay.
He does sales in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And then my little brother works at the same company that my parents work at, which is like a, it's called Flexco. And they do like cleaning products for conveyor belts, but they also make like the metal teeth that hold them together.
Oh, I like this. This is real Midwest shit. This is real Midwest shit right here.
How it's made type shit.
Yeah.
Damn, thank God for the internet.
So every summer you fly to the Flexco lake house, everyone gets together, you go take the boats out, stuff like that. Do you live like that real kind of American Midwestern lifestyle, or do you add a little the guest style flavor to it? Are you taking pills in the bathroom?
I mean, no. I wish there was a lake house. There's not. My parents moved to like right outside the Grand Rapids area, and then my brothers live close to them as well. And then, I mean, we'll go to Lake Michigan a lot,
yeah,
which is gorgeous.
We love lake culture.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Michigan lake culture is a big deal. It's like really, I've only seen pictures, but I have plenty of friends who are like, you don't get it, bro. Like, you don't get it.
No,
I'm like, I guess I don't.
Well,
it's really good. Like, I almost hate talking about it too much because I don't want people to go, because right now it's like calm and its own thing.
You don't want it to turn into Mykonos or something, is what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah, rural.
It's blown out.
Rural Michigan is like Tulum. Yeah, I don't do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, it's
okay.
You know.
I think you're going to be fine. What is the, I want to know about the Midwestern food eating. We've had some Midwestern guests on before, and my brother's girlfriend is from Michigan as well, and I'm like, is it true that you guys really eat like marshmallows for dinner and shit like that? I want to know what the Midwestern summertime down at Lake Michigan vibe is for you. What fucked up shit are you eating? Or do you show up with like, this is my endive salad that Flynn made for me at Gem? And they're like, get that fucking shit out of here.
No. I feel like it's a lot of like cookout food. You know, it's like hot dogs and burgers and nothing too crazy. Very like American.
Okay. But standard shit.
But there is.
And when you were a young model, did your mom ever slap the hand when you reached for that second dog?
No, everyone is very naturally skinny in my family.
Oh, must be nice. Rub it in. Rub it in, Ethan. Rub it in.
A lot of high metab.
You're the one Midwestern family. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. So your whole family are sort of built like swimmers?
Yeah, there's some swim bods.
You have a Phelpsian build to you, I will say.
Oh, thank you.
I don't know if he's got those shoulders yet, Jason. I'm sure he's working on it, but let's, you know.
I am working on them. I'm working on them.
Watch this space.
Yeah.
right in this area.
Yeah.
So Phelps is he's burning 8,000 calories a day in the pool with his butterflies. What are you doing to keep your physique? Are you not eating as much and working out less, or are you eating a lot and working out a lot.
I'm trying to eat the most in my life right now that I have ever.
We're bulking right now at the Brooklyn Heights Equinox.
Yes.
Wow, bulking during Coachella. I think I'm gonna have an aneurysm.
No, I don't. I don't do Equinox. I go to Blink. I like my Blink, and I have my trainer at Blink.
You know what? You're just a regular Midwestern guy. You know what I mean? You're just a regular Midwestern guy. I'm hitting the Blink. It's $10 a month. Yeah.
You know that with. Just want to let you know, I could send Equinox a DM and get you a free membership for life. You know that you could do that at any point, right?
Really?
Yeah, I could talk to some people.
I like the humility. I like the humility of Blink, but is this something that you've done for years and you just stuck with it? Or is it just the closest, most convenient?
It's not even the closest, most convenient gym. I think it's just like, I have this thing where it's like, you know, I can go out of my way to Blink. I can work with my trainer every single time I go. And it will still be cheaper than just going to Equinox.
Okay, this is a little bit of a life hack. Okay.
Don't bury the lead.
We didn't know you had a trainer.
Yeah, no. I mean, no shame with the trainer.
Can you shout them out? Shout them out. Yeah. we always credit trainers on this podcast.
Yeah, we do, actually.
Well, I can give you Coach Willie's contact.
Coach Willie? This sounded a little funkier than I thought. Now. Coach Willie? What the hell? Give us a little
Coach Willie's great.
Give us a little breakdown of Willie's vibe if you don't mind. I don't know.
Just the elevator pitch. Just the hot points on Willie.
I don't know many Willies.
He's really like all about posture.
Okay.
And like I grew really fast when I was younger, so I need to like take care of my back. Mm. Mm-hmm. So he's really good for all that.
Maybe the iron neck. So we're doing a lot of tall guy mobility stuff.
You know, yeah. No Pilates for you? This sounds like a Pilates workout.
No, I did a little bit of Pilates. I have to do it again. I did. What's the one that everyone does? And what's the funny one? The like influencer one.
Oh, I'm.
You know what I'm talking about.
Forma.
That one.
Yeah, it's $75. Forma. It's $75 a class. I think it's $175 a class for a private.
Cool. That one I've done like twice, and it was really hard. It was very hard.
I don't find. Yeah, there was a big New York Times story about her because that thing started in LA, I think, during COVID, and then it was like this. You know, Kaia Gerber went a few times. You know, and then everybody starts going, and then she opens New York, and the prices are just astronomical. But I want to look like Kaia, so there's nowhere else I have to go. I don't have a choice.
You walk out feeling hot. You feel like really good.
Mm-hmm. You do. No, you feel long and lean. It's all the promises are true. All the promises are true.
Okay, let's say you leave this Pilates class or you finish an epic session with Coach Willie. What are we eating right after that? Is it a smoothie or are we loading up on protein?
Well, I walk out of the gym with muscle milk in hand.
Sick.
And then
muscle milk.
And I will chug that and be finished with it 2 blocks from the gym.
What flavor? Mm-hmm. Chocolate or regular?
I do vanilla.
Vanilla. He finishes the vanilla, smashes it on his forehead like a Bud Light, throws it. Throws it.
Watch out, losers.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I walk to Chinatown from Brooklyn Heights to and from work every day.
Oh, that's
day.
Nice.
And then so I'll do that. And then before I go into the office, I'll grab like an oatmeal, a frittata. I do my fruit salad. Okay. I'll do like a.
Is this from Starbucks?
Yeah, where you?
No, this is from Smile to Go.
Oh yeah, Smile to Go is underrated classic. It really is. It really is.
Yeah, it's super classic.
That one muffin, the quinoa muffin, is delicious. I think about it all the time.
That's the one that I get.
That's a delicious muffin.
It's so good.
A delicious muffin.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a.
I like this.
This is reasonable. Yeah, this is
just three grown men eating muffins in 2024.
we do things different on How Long Gone. Okay, so you're. Do you eat lunch though, or you skip it?
No, I'm eating every meal.
Okay,
and then we have like huge Costco like trail mix bag that I'm always.
Yeah, you're a Costco. You're a Costco power user.
Well, I guess it's no. You know what? I'm sorry. It's from Amazon.
Sure.
But it's like, you know, the huge bags. And sometimes I'll just have the bag next to me and it lasts like 3 days.
Trail mix hits the spot. But does it have chocolate in it or not?
Usually cranberry is as sweet as it gets. But, yeah.
Those are good guardrails.
We currently have like a M&M mix.
Coach Willie says anything more than a cranberry, it's out.
Once you start adding chocolate to stuff, I'm just like, this is just like this is dessert. Like we got to draw the lines. We got to draw the lines somewhere.
Yeah, no, it's nasty.
Chris is at a wellness hotel in Dubai right now. We were talking about cupping kink on the last episode. About sort of as the wellness trend continues to rise, crazy fitness stuff. He just did a cryo chamber session earlier today. We were talking about like cupping bruises, like having a sexual attraction to them. And Chris admitted having one of those. Do you have any fitness related kinks like that?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I'm pretty like simple. I'm a simple guy. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Well, yeah, just vanilla like your muscle milk. You don't want to find find an acupuncture needle in somebody's ankle when you're taking their pants off. I understand.
Okay.
Yeah. I think when I talked about this, just to be clear,
don't backpedal.
Well, it was specifically about Gwyneth Paltrow. Not anyone can just have cupping bruises and it be good.
Right.
Like I have them right now, and no one's beaten my door down.
Okay.
Just want to clear that up.
I wanted to talk about being a multi-hyphenate. A lot of people would consider a multi-hyphenate. Or they'll say like if you have multiple things listed in your bio, you sort of don't really excel at any of them, but you seem to be excelling at all of yours. Do you ever feel like you're doing too many things, or do you want to do more? Yeah,
definitely feel like I'm doing too many things sometimes. Because I opened the gallery when things were a little bit slower for me as a photographer, and then this year for me it's been the busiest I've ever been. And the gallery is a much more serious thing than it was when we opened. So I don't think I'll take anything on. But I get very like, if I'm going to do something, I really want to do it right and all the way.
What do you think it is? What do you think? Because I have a lot of photographer friends and this discussion always comes up, like the ebb and flow of the work where you'll just be, it'll be insane for like a year. And then it just all of a sudden zap disappears. And then you have free time. You're opening a gallery. You have free time. You know what I mean? You're doing, and then, you know, it picks back up. But I just don't, do you think there's any reason for that? Is it just trends? Is it just different editors moving jobs? Like, what do you think it is?
I think a lot of it is like who you work with and if they're at a magazine or not. I think also there's just like, cause I had a really like, when I opened the gallery, it was like a year of basically not working. And it was my first lull moment because I've been doing this now for almost 10 years. Mm-hmm. So I had my first like scary moment like that. And yeah, just like people just stopped calling. It's crazy. But then now it's like, I think just the way that it works too is like someone's work just really speaks to the moment or with what brands are trying to say. And maybe I think, yeah, there's different moments that certain people make sense and then other people don't. And then it switches. And
yeah, no, I think you're right. It just seems like it's something that it just affects everyone. It really does affect everyone kind of at every level, too. I feel like it doesn't even.
Yeah.
Even, I mean, maybe you're doing shit secretly to make money, but like the stuff that you're sharing slows down, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And well, that's why it's so exciting, is because there's no, you can't really predict it 100%. It really is just, you know, kind of up to chance of what the trend is going to be.
Yeah.
That's why it's fun.
You have to be just like recreating yourself also when you're at your highs. Like you can't like wait till it gets quiet to be like, okay, I have to like reinvent what I'm doing. Because yeah, I think that's something I learned. You have to like really constantly be evolving on your own.
Proactive with your like a Beyonce album cycle.
Yeah.
I can't react to what's happening. They react to me.
Yeah. Exactly. Do you what's your split between commercial and editorial stuff? Do you try to keep it what's the ratio?
Next question.
I mean, it depends. Like I have this year, I have a lot of things going on that like I have my second book comes out.
Yeah.
It's coming out really soon. And then that kind of fills a lot of the editorial space for me, or I feel like I have to do less because of that.
You exercise that muscle with the book versus a magazine or whatever.
Yeah. But then I also like have just come off, like I did like four editorials like back to back, and then I wanted to die. And then you have like a commercial, like period. It's funny because it seems like a lot of it is like all the commercial work happens and then all the editorial happens. And
yeah,
but yeah, it's always super concentrated. It's like everyone talks and they're like, let's do it all these 2 weeks. And then
Well, what do you think's gonna happen with magazines? Because I feel like they don't have any money and they want people like you to be taking the photos. Where do we figure it out? What happens?
It's hard because I don't think a lot of people know this, but with magazines, even a lot of the big magazines, photographers are always coming out of pocket.
Oh,
to do editorial.
Like thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah, like my my first like year when I was, my first year being signed, I was with a big agency. So I was able to get money from them fronted for editorial. And I was super ambitious. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I would do editorials and spend $45,000.
$45,000?
Before I ever like booked for like money. Yes. But I didn't even have, I was just like really, really ambitious with it. And I was like, this is the cover of Vogue Italia. It needs to be Vogue Italia.
Do you think that paid off? Like, do you think those decisions like helped you further your career? It was worth it?
Yeah, no, it did. I was like around 200 grand in debt with my agency at the worst moment. And it took me like 3 years of being signed to finally get money in my pocket from photography, which was crazy. And it was a gamble, but that's the thing. Like, editorial is always a gamble.
Yeah.
Because you need to do it sometimes more than others. But now I can approach it in a better way, being older and being in the industry long enough where I can say, okay, who is the talent? Mm. Is this a brand special? If it is, let's get more money.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, like, if it's, yeah. The Chanel, like, the Chanel brand special, I'm not coming out of pocket, guys. Sorry.
Yeah. No. No. And then also, like, what am I shooting? Does someone see this in a way, like, is a creative director going to see this or a brand going to see this and be like, oh, you know what, we want to shoot something like that for us?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because if I'm just doing, like, if I really want to do my black and white and, like, mm-hmm. you know, make it fully for me, it needs to be a book project. But if I'm doing editorial for a magazine, I need to approach it in a way that it's like, how can this, like, obviously I want to be artistic with it and create something fresh and new, but at the same time, I have to be mindful of how does this translate into the commercial down the road.
As a case study, proof of concept for an idea, and you play around, you put it together, and then hopefully Chanel will be like, do this for us.
Yeah.
And then here's the check.
It's tough because I think people want to keep those things like siloed because they want them to feel too different, which I don't think is necessarily the right way to do it, you know?
Yeah.
Do you only shoot digital?
Yeah. I mean, I'll shoot like film for fun. Like, I'll do like a Polaroid, or I'll like, you know,
sure.
I'll carry the contacts around like with friends or something, but even that I don't do enough. But yeah, all digital. Cause that's the first camera. Like, my first moments when I was younger was with like the family point and shoot little square back camera. That's what my friends and I back home did.
That's so funny because cool that picks. Was my first experience too. But then I got like a T4 when I was like 19 and just thought that was cooler, but I didn't know why. Mm-hmm. But I think now the cool pics is the coolest thing.
It's Terry Richardson, that's why.
Yeah, it was Terry for sure. It was for sure. But like, it's cool to shoot only. I think it's cool for you to shoot only digital. I really like that.
Yeah. No, I mean,
it's unexpected.
And I like it too when like, or I think it's fun to like, I don't know. I don't have to worry about spending money on film. I can be way more experimental. If something's not working and I hate it that much, I can delete it. You know, like,
sure, I never have to see this again.
Yeah, but it made it so for me, I think, learning as a photographer when I was younger, I was like photographing people every day. I was mm-hmm. like, meet me in the park, meet me in the park, meet me in the park. And like, I didn't have to worry about money with it. Once I had my camera, it was just like,
meet me in the park.
That was it.
That's so interesting because I do think the monetary, because I take photos for fun all the time with my contacts, you know what I mean? And it is, like, I don't even think about the money, but it's kind of insane. Like, it's kind of crazy how much it costs for a hobby, much less when it's your job. Because you see these motherfuckers pulling up to Color House with 300 rolls of, you know, 120. And I'm like, this is, I don't know what client is going to agree to pay for this at a certain point.
You have a problem, sir.
Yeah, it's crazy. It really, I mean, I like it and I think it's cool, but at a certain point I'm like, what, yeah, is it the best option, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like, when I was younger, I was like, oh, you know, people shouldn't be shooting film, like, whoa. But I think everybody has their like
their thing,
different approach, and like I think film is like really gorgeous, and like when I use it for just personal, mm-hmm. it is like a really fun way to remember something, because you experienced it and then you get the film back and you get to relive it again, mm-hmm. and you forget about some of these moments. But for me professionally with turnarounds, because like half the time I'm shooting something and people want the finals like 2 days after,
yeah, the next day.
Or like, you know, you shoot something for Zara and you have 2 days to do the edit, and then half an hour after you turn it in, it's on the website. You know, it's so real.
Vertically integrated fast fashion. They don't, even with photos, it's quick.
Everything is fast. But I just can't imagine doing what I do and it not being digital, just because of, but maybe people expect it from me knowing that I'm doing digital. So then I'm
They know that you can go fast.
Yeah.
So you've never been a dark room warrior and gone down that path.
I actually went to Color House because I started working with them on a few personal things and they were giving me a tour. I asked to go in the dark room because I'd never been in a dark room before. And that was this year. Like I'm a photographer. And this year was the first time I ever stepped foot in a dark room, because I didn't go to college. I didn't like,
yeah, yeah.
So that I never had that experience. So I got to see a dark room.
That's really funny. They're like, yeah, we can show you our dark room facilities. You're like, oh, I'd love to see those. I've never been there before.
Better late than never. Better late than never.
Yeah.
Okay. So you said you didn't go to school. Did you get plucked out to start modeling around that age?
So I wanted to be a fashion photographer when I was like 14, went through puberty really late, mm-hmm. found out I could model when I was like 17. I did like a bunch of self-portraits and friends back home were taking pictures of me. Mm-hmm. And then I found models.com when it was a blog in like 2006, mm-hmm. 2007. Mm-hmm. And then I just started sending pictures out. And then once I found an agency, I kind of convinced my parents that it was better to move to New York and hopefully work with the people I want to be like, instead of going to Detroit and sure. learning from someone who like couldn't go to New York.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And yeah,
Detroit and New York are very close, but New York does win in the end for the models and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you moved to New York at what age?
I started coming here alone when I was 17. I was the first kid in my high school to graduate doing online school.
Wow.
Back in 2008. And then I moved here immediately after high school in 2008.
So in 2008, where were you living?
The first place I ever lived was Roosevelt Island.
What?
Which have you been? Yeah,
no,
so
I've
weird.
Been, but like it's what? Like a
yeah, it's a funny place.
There was a I model apartment on Roosevelt Island.
No. When I moved to New York, I went straight to Roosevelt Island. But Greenpoint in 2007 was an model apartment. Like But yeah, I started officially on Roosevelt Island, and I actually turned the studio that I was staying into a model apartment. But I like told everyone, I was like, let's pay what model apartments should cost. So I got like six people in a studio on Roosevelt Island, and we all were paying like $200 a month.
That's beautiful. Pretty insane. That's an insane way to live. But I'm sure it only lasted a year or whatever. You know, I'm sure it wasn't.
It was like 6 months. 6 months, and then
when you moved out of there, what was there like a big job or something that gave you that first big check to level up to the next level?
No, the lease was just up, and then everyone was kind of like I was promoting when I was like 18, and I met like some promoters that were like living in Williamsburg,
like club promoters,
and I thought Williamsburg was really
okay.
Yeah, I was like a club promoter.
Okay, let's what clubs are we talking about, if you don't mind name dropping? Okay,
so this is funny. So when I was 18, I was doing 10 June. Mm-hmm. I was doing One Oak. I hosted the opening night of Avenue.
Wow. Oh, so you were thriving. New York was your oyster.
Yeah, no, I was like, Well, I was like driving around in SUVs, sitting in the trunk, smoking cigarettes, like, you know, ashing in high heels. It was like the whole thing. And I thought it was so cool.
I mean, it is. That is cool. That's a pretty great, I mean, you know.
You've never wielded more power in your life when you were doing that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You could have 100 people on set. You've never had that as much power as you did in 10 June.
Exactly.
Of being able to get a guy a bottle.
That's so. Yeah. So were you did they want you to bring guys and girls, or did they want you to bring guys?
No, it was no guys at all. It was only girls.
It was only girls. Okay. No.
Girls. Yeah, no.
I didn't think Avenue had
did. So you're a girl whisperer.
I mean, but really, I just like went with my two like girlfriends, you know, that were like, one was a model and one was a model type. And we like, you know, we would just get in everywhere we wanted to, and it was amazing. And then we had like the few like promoters that like we always had a spot for. They would always and we just kind of floated as a unit.
How hard were you partying?
Oh, extremely hard. Like because I I grew up like, have you seen Jesus Camp? You know Jesus Camp? I grew up like Jesus.
That's you.
Camp. So yeah. I didn't get a moment to really like go crazy until I moved to New York. So I like,
you had catching up to do.
Yeah. So I really went all out. Yeah.
Okay. You went all out. You did everything. Can we get a little more specific?
I did like almost everything, you know, not like heroin, but you know.
Sure. We all have a line. I understand what you're saying. Jason and I are both old enough to remember what was going on at Avenue on a Saturday night. It's no secret.
You know? We were there together.
You've seen the sun come up a couple times.
Damn, that's really fun. So when did you work with David Armstrong?
So David, I met kind of right away when I moved to the city. And then he photographed me for his book, 615 Jefferson Avenue. Mm-hmm. And we just connected right away. And I told him that I was here modeling because I wanted to be a photographer. And he right away was like, oh, shoot in my house whenever you want. And I was too busy partying and everything to like take him up on the offer. And then once I kind of like spiraled out and kind of like crashed from all the partying, I was like 20 maybe, I started seeing him more often, and then I started really focusing on my photography again. And then I got an offer to do something for V-Man online, and so I photographed a friend. David loved the work. He hadn't seen him in pictures. He saw them then. He freaked out. I asked if I could work for him, and then I ended up working for him for three, four years on and off.
Yeah. I mean, he's
amazing.
He's one of the greats. I would say underappreciated.
Oh, extremely. But
we need more mentorship like this going on in the fashion world, I say.
Totally. Because he was like, he was not threatened by anyone working for him. And every single person that worked with him, he just wanted them to succeed. And that is so rare. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing about it is if someone does it for you, you want to do it for other people. Yeah. Like it's an addictive thing. Mm.
The other way is the guys who want to hire assistants that don't want to be photographers, which is such a rare, very small group of people. I just love loading film and setting up lights. I have no interest in doing this for a career.
I hate the art form personally.
There are some people though that who like really are excellent at doing light, and they want to just be light
techs, for sure,
and they're so good at it. And some of them are like, you know, legendary. Like it's like very, because like the team that I work with, like I would not be able to do the pictures I do without the team that I work with.
Who's on the day-to-day squad?
So I work with this guy James Sakalian, who does all of the light with me.
Okay.
Rihanna voice.
He's incredible. He'll like, I have to tell him to like pull it back because he'll risk his life for a photo shoot. And he'll like, let me just try this thing. He'll be like standing on top of a ladder, or like, you know, we'll be in the jungle and he'll be in his underwear holding like a light box. Like, and if he drops it, we're all dead, you know, like.
Yeah. This could go wrong. This could go bad quick.
Machete in his teeth.
Yeah. He's very like, let me just show you something. But I work with James a lot, and then usually we'll work with like the same digis. Mm-hmm. But James and I do everything together. So James travels with me wherever I go.
Your right hand, number two.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Speaking of managing teams, are you the type of person that feels the need to sometimes self-manage, or do you self-manage, or are you able to delegate and let your people do all that for you?
Oh, self-manage in what way? What do you mean?
Like your career? Like have you ever just fire my agent? I'll do this myself. You're not getting back to emails fast enough. I'll do it. Okay.
No, I could not. I'm like so bad at emailing.
When we were talking about having you on this podcast, I noticed your emailing strategy is different than mine.
Strategy.
I think I'm very like so sorry for the late reply on probably like 80% of what I send out.
So sorry.
But no, I have a
it's,
great
it's built
team
into
that
your
I get
your
to
signature
work with.
Is an apology yeah, for how late the email says, is.
I really apologize. You've done some you've worked with a lot of celebrities, and I feel like that's always like a high stress situation, but do you find overall people are pretty cool?
I think the longer I do it, the more maybe respect I have, or people will see my work like, oh, he worked with these people. So it makes things a little bit easier. I think also I'm more confident around celebrities, because at first when you're starting out, it's like you do your first big celebrity shoot and it feels like this is like life or death. Like if this shoot goes bad, they're going to call the next young photographer in. I'm not going to be able to do it. It took me like 5 years into my career to be like, you know what? Like if it's not like the best shoot ever, it's okay. You have enough under your belt. You'll get called back. It's going to be all right. Mm-hmm. But so there's a lot of pressure in the beginning. I think now the big thing is just navigating publicists. I think publicists are like so difficult. I've had so many moments where a publicist will be like, telling me something not to say or not to do or not to blah, blah, blah with a talent. And then I'll be like, okay, well, I'll just like ask the talent. Like they'll be like, don't play this song. Like do not play this song. And then I'll be like, okay, well, it's probably easier if I just go to the talent and ask them what they want to listen to. I go to the talent,
there's better
like,
ways
what do you
to
want?
Do this.
And then they request the song that the publicist has just told me not to play. So you have to really like navigate around the publicist and just, be direct with who you're working with, but that's just going to make the work better anyway.
I feel like
photographer subject is
because they're always chill
is too important not to go direct, you know what I mean? Like what the fuck does a publicist have to do with that, you know? Like it just doesn't.
I think a lot of them too feel like to show they're doing a good job they need to like the taste level is like not there for 90% of them. And it's just, you know, it's a headache. But if you can navigate it, it can be fine.
Yeah, of course. No. But I think you're right. It's a confidence thing.
Do you remember the first celeb that you shot? And if it was nerve-wracking?
The first celeb I shot? Shit. I mean, one of the first big things that I ever shot with a celebrity was Rihanna.
Shit.
For Vogue.
Okay.
It was like my first Vogue cover.
Chill.
And that was... I mean, she was amazing. You know, I think like the world agrees that Rihanna is like one of the most beautiful women on the planet. Like everyone's on the same page with that. And she's so cool. And she was just super easy. And we had a really great time. And
A real testament for the plus sides of smoking weed, I feel like, is to be that famous, that powerful, and that
but
just
that's,
fucking chill.
That's her reputation, though. It's like her always been her reputation, I think, is that it's like...
Reputation.
Yeah. It's cool and mellow, and
I agree.
You know, we can get it done.
We should plug the book. You said that's coming out soon.
Oh, yeah. Coming out very soon is my second book.
Okay, you have a book. You have a book that's coming out very soon.
Very soon. It's called Bombshell, it's
great name.
Photographs of all my friends bombshelling.
Can you explain what bombshelling is, just for our less? I mean, obviously we know
bombshelling as a verb. I have an idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of the same friends that were in my first book, and now we're all like a bit older and feeling sexier. So everyone kind of like comes to the studio and they're paired with a hairstylist. Lucas Wilson is one, Sonny Molina, and then Jimmy Paul. Those were the three hairstylists we worked with. And people would come with clothes or whatever they felt was bombshell to them. And then they would sit in the hair chair with whoever was doing hair that day and create characters with whoever's doing the hair, and then I would just document it and kind of like let them lead with like what bombshelling was to them. And
bombshelling mm-hmm, might mm-hmm. you fucked up now because bombshelling might enter my vernacular. I like that as a verb.
That's great. That's cool. Great. I love that.
It's cool. I've never heard it used like
Remember
that.
Remember where you heard it first?
Yeah, you heard
it's it. Your chili crunch.
The vibe of it is very I'd be like old school, like you move to New York and you want to be a model. So you like go and you have to like bring your clothes and do your makeup. And
yeah, yeah.
So there's like that rawness to it, which is really fun.
What if I picked up this flower, you know, stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, no, if it's bombshell to you, it's bombshell.
Wow. Okay. Know? I'm going to think about what bombshell is to me and let you know. Thank you.
Yeah,
for joining us. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It was a pleasure.
It was great.
Yeah, of course. We'll see you soon.
Okay. Bye.